Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
The outstanding Andy Katz. Andy, great to talk with you again.
Thanks for having me.
All right. So you've had a couple of really terrific interviews here along the way. I want to start with the one with Drew Timmy, because Timmy's always fun and engaging. What were some of the factors for Drew in deciding, you know what, no NBA, I've got to come back for one more year?
Well, he's a great example of NIL benefiting college basketball. And it's unfortunate that it took this long and there was short-sightedness from university presidents, because players like Drew, like I would say Armando Bacot, Chase Jackson Davis, who are second-round picks, potentially undrafted, and I'm not saying necessarily those three, but players that are second-round draft picks in the past would have gone, without question, try their luck, see if they can make something. Now, legitimately, they can make more money, you know, by returning to college basketball, whether that's six figures or significantly, you know, higher within the six figures. And the other thing is, I do think this is all a product of the post pandemic, in that, you know, this past year, for the most part, you know, we had college basketball without restrictions. Obviously, in January, with Omicron, that set us back, that's country, but I mean within the sport, with some restrictions and masking and things of that nature, and players being out because of testing positive. But it was obviously more normal than we had the year before. And I do think that getting the taste of a sort of normal NCAA tournament and the experience of playing in front of packed crowds, you know, there's an addiction to that in a good way, and something that a lot of these players want to continue to experience at least one more year. And I think that factor with the NIL all contributed to players like Timmy saying, you know what, this is pretty good. I'm going to at least ride this out for another year.
Yeah, in Trace Jackson Davis's case, look, he has some NIL already set up at Indiana, which helps him. And then, of course, right when he got to the NBA draft process, he got COVID. I think that helped make the decision for him.
And there's no question. In fact, I mean, you know, that's a huge factor for him. But I kind of wonder, like, even if he had been healthy.
Oh, no, he'd have come back.
Yeah, because he just was not someone who was a lock.
Right, and you and I both know, you really, if you're not a first-round pick, you're really, and you're a second-round pick, it's you're kind of skirting the possibility of making the team even at that point. That's just the way the NBA is. Now, a guy that will make his team is Keegan Murray with Sacramento. So he leaves his twin brother, quote, behind, and now Chris is going to be, you know, obviously the prime-time go-to guy at Iowa. You know, you talked with him. You know, that means he's got to take on the mantle of this. How do you think he's reacting to it?
Oh, I think he's embracing it.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny. I hate to compare him and Jordan Davis. It's not fair. It's, you know,
right,
pretty unique that we've got two sets of twins in the Big Ten. One leaves, for the, you know, one each leaves for the lottery, and the others are left behind. But Chris Murray certainly, I think, in more of a ready position to take that mantle from his brother than Jordan is from Johnny.
Yeah.
I do think Jordan's role is going to increase. And I talked to him the previous 2 weeks, you know, at Wisconsin. And I think he'll make shots, but he's not going to be the go-to guy. That's going to be more Chucky Hepburn or Tyler Wall. Whereas Chris Murray, who at the end of the season certainly was taking some big shots, even in that Richmond game, I think it was, you know, he will be in position to increase his productivity. I mean, to go from 9 points a game to 15 to 17, maybe. I don't know if he's a 22, 23 point a game scorer like his brother, but he certainly could be a mid-teen per game scorer, and that's something that Iowa's going to need.
And yeah, no question that they're going to need that along the way. What about the rebuild at Illinois? Because you know, they've gone an interesting route. They've had some good recruits come in, interesting transfers, but they did lose the core of what they have. How interested are you in the rebuild they have going on there?
Significantly. I mean, if all the pieces fit, they're going to be one of those teams that I think could be, you know, certainly a factor you know, in the Big Ten. Sky Clark, you know, they were high profile point guard. Coleman Hawkins, I think, is going to have a big time year. He's returning. Getting Matthew Meyer from Baylor is a kind of grinder that Brad Underwood loves, and he could make some big shots for them. So there's no question the pieces exist for Illinois to be in the thick of it. You know, you may not ask me, but I'm going to tell you, the team that I think people are sleeping on that returns more than people might imagine is Rutgers.
Yes,
I think their core three with Caleb McConnell, who was Big Ten Defensive Player of the Year, Al McKee, and then Cliff Amore, I think is going to have a big-time season for Rutgers. You know, they obviously missed Geo Baker and Ron Harper Jr., but having that core three back and the rack being full, and, you know, Michael told me he loves his recruits, and, you know, they all say that, but we'll see. I think it's significant for the chances for Rutgers to take to be, you know, in the chase for a bid. And as we know in the Big Ten, if you can finish somewhere in that top eight, you know, you're probably going to go in. And then after that, you're on the bubble, and you never know.
McConnell is an excellent defender with length, and not only that, has become a better offensive player. Amore, Dick Girardi and I last year, and, you know, obviously we did the times that we did the Penn State Rutgers games, so impressed by, you know, because I know he was hurt his first year, but he really came on last year.
Yeah, you know, I mean, he's elastic man. I mean, he just sort of he dunks the ball so quickly. It's really amazing just, you know, A, how much he's improved, and his ability to affect the game in a variety of ways, I think, is only going to, you know, continue to have Rutgers be a team that's going to be very difficult to deal with.
I have to ask you about, obviously, Micah Shrewsbury went through his first year. He could not recruit anybody, so it was transfers once he got the job. What did you think of the job he did in year one to then start setting up year two?
You know, solid. I mean, look, if the transfers give him the contributions that he expects, you know, and they've got a core back. I mean, look, losing John Hare is significant because he was the heart and soul of the team. So you're going to need to find a player who's going to give you those kind of minutes, who's going to be, you know, diving on the floor, motivating everyone, using his body to try to will the Nittany Lions to out of a possession, you know, just by using his in any way he can to just be around the basketball and make things happen. You always knew when John was on the floor. You know, he was never invisible. And if they can have someone who does that for them, won't be the same guy, but, I mean, if they can have someone who can provide that for them, that's going to be significant.
Yeah, obviously, in the 40 years I've broadcast Penn State now going to 41, 30 of them have been in the Big Ten. And, you know, there's certain cycles, and I feel like the Big Ten's been in an incredible cycle the last 3-4 years of high-level teams and almost the ability of anybody can knock off anybody on a given night. Down the road, USC and UCLA get into this mix. You know Andy Infield. You know Mick Cronin. What will they bring to the table that will then, you know, that could not only enhance but also change the dynamic of the conference?
Well, I mean, what the Big Ten has done immediately is they've added two more programs that are, I think, will be and have been for the most part in the last, you know, whatever, 5-6 years, perennial NCAA tournament teams. And I think there's only one time in the last 9 years that one of them wasn't in the tournament. So that immediately is going to help. I don't think that's taking away bids. I think that's adding bids.
I do too.
I think we're going to go from, you know, potentially 9 out of 14 to 11 out of 16.
I agree.
And, you know, the SEC might do the same if they have a good year. But the strength of the Big Ten, is not going to diminish. And what it also does is as the season progresses, and this is the reason that, you know, Rutgers, I think, got in, was as difficult as their final six games were last year, they went 4-2, and all six of those teams were tournament teams. And so if you have a schedule where the last six games, you're trying to get in the tournament, against all tournament-type teams, you got a good chance. And, you know, I go back to 2018, the year that Penn State and Nebraska were close but didn't get in.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem for both of them was they didn't beat the top three. Now, that year was the one down year recently in the Big Ten.
Right.
And, you know, that's going to be an anomaly when we look back at this sort of the cycle. And, you know, for the most part, you're going to have opportunities. I mean, we always hear every year, I mean, we're on the set, and we're look how hard their schedule is. They got to play X amount of teams in a row. The reality is, if you want to be in the tournament, if you're a marginal team or you're on the bubble, that's what you want, because that's going to help you get in over the third-place A-10 team if you're a bubble Big Ten or the Second Valley or what have you. I mean, you need these opportunities, and that's what USC and UCLA are going to provide. You know, to me, the most interesting thing will be scheduling. You know, do we stay at 20? Does every school get to go out to L.A. once, or is it like go once, you play two, and then you skip a year? You know, everyone's going to want to go to Southern California because for recruiting and a nice little break. And here's the thing, and I'm speaking through men's basketball,
right,
which I do think obviously women's basketball will have to get the same charter aspect, which I do think will come, but I think they're going to have to do that.
Yes.
Because football is once a week, but with you know, they're going to be able to fly charter and, you know, and get it done. Whereas, I mean, think about, you know, Rutgers to Nebraska. The issue, of course, will be, you know, how they figure out the Olympic sports, because obviously you can't have everyone play everyone all the time across the country. So that's you know, the most interesting thing they're going to have to figure out. But in basketball and football, for the men and the women, and then in football, I do think it's all doable because of the money coming in and the ability to use private plans.
All right, so I guess you were asked this before before you started here, so I'll bring it up now. Everybody asks about Notre Dame all the time. So what's your viewpoint on that?
Well, I mean, I don't think they're going to go to a conference, Big Ten or ACC, unless they have to.
Yep.
Now the question is, do they have to? To me, the most interesting thing I think we'll know here shortly, okay, is in the next month, if NBC has a piece of the Big Ten, you know, I think that could be an indicator that helps Notre Dame get in the Big Ten.
Yep.
If NBC does not, you know, then maybe it doesn't happen. Obviously, for the Olympic sports I'm talking about, they're a natural fit. They're a natural fit in the footprint for all sports, actually. But they're more of a footprint, you know, in the Big Ten, you know, than the ACC. They have that deal. You know, it's worked well for all their other sports to be in the ACC. The ACC, I kind of want them to go. But, I mean, I think the era of the independents is gone, and even in college football, or it's fading. But we'll see if they're sort of the last one. I mean, BYU obviously tried it, and, you know, they went into the Big 12. I don't think it's, you know, they're literally the only school that has even a slither of a chance of making it sustainable, but only if they have that, you know, television contract.
Right.
If NBC either A, is not doing Notre Dame or is not folded into something like the Big Ten, then yes, I think they're going to be desperate to get in either the Big Ten or the ACC. But we'll wait and see how that plays out.
Final question is actually about you. You're an outstanding reporter, in tune, great sources. As time has gone, and you have to be versatile in this, more and more, lots of TV. Now, some of it's been as a reporter, some in the studio, but now doing games as well. What has that transition been like for you?
No, I love it. I mean, I love the diversity of being able to do a lot of different things. You know, when I left ESPN in 2017, I feel like I've been able to do more. You know, the digital space was a space when I was at ESPN that I jumped into. And I think those that did not embrace it have been left aside, that you have to. And I've had plenty of times where I've been a one-man band, you know, recording, videoing, and getting content up. I've always believed content is king. And I think that's what's helped me, you know, to quote a March Madness phrase, survive in advance, to continue to adapt. And I think that's my advice when I talk to people. You've got to be able to do a variety of things And look, you know, we've seen this. I your partner, I mean, he's the ultimate sort of grinder, you know, reporter from a newspaper. Yep. And he's obviously transitioned well in being an analyst for Penn State basketball. Probably not something he thought he was going to be doing in at the beginning of his career, but he adjusted and has adapted.
Yeah, and he's great at it too, but I'm extremely prejudiced. So, Andy, it's always a pleasure. Great work, whatever. And by the way, that's the exact advice that I give to my broadcasting class every semester. I tell them straight out, look, we're trying to promote versatility because you need to figure out ways to survive in this business. That's why.
And I will just say, Steve, before you let me go, I will just say, great move by Penn State to move the students.
You know,
I've talked to many people at Penn State. I was there this season. I know how difficult it is during the week, get people to come to a weeknight game in the winter. So I get it. So that's why you've got to adjust to make it look better on television, make it feel more intimate, certainly on those weeknight games.
I totally agree. And that's now, in other words, the camera's going to shoot at the bench. What's going to be behind the bench? Kids jumping up and down and excited, and it looks like it's active and alive.
Yes.
Andy, thanks.
That.
Yep. Andy, thanks so much. Appreciate your time very much.
All right. Thank you.